coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. You have joined us in the middle of a story arc. I am, as always, Andrew Farmer, and with me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston. Oh, I get it. I get what's happening here. In being reverential to tonight's episode, Cole has disappeared into the shadows in a corner where he is scaling the wall only to hang above me. Cole... Cole, I told you stop filling the studio with smoke for no reason. I know you're here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's what happens.
Should not have done that.
You should not have done that, because tonight we are talking about that most dark and mysterious of characters in our favorite comic books, the Ninji. Tonight's Ninji Night.
Yes, it's Ninji Night, and not only dark and mysterious, but. It's insanely popular.
Oh, it's nuts. It's crazy time how popular ninjas are okay, so before we get into that, because we will get into that, let's move from our weird cold open into the show by saying that you have this is issue 253, and you have found us in the middle of at the dawning of a story arc. Cole, would you explain the story arc to the wonderful listeners at home, please?
Absolutely. If you missed the last episode, you ought to go check it out anyway. I mean, we had a lot of fun and occasionally got on topic there, but this is the I Think I'm Turning Japanese story arc that was born out of the subject of the first issue of the arc, and that, of course, was the feudal period in Japanese history and its place in comics. And now we're going to touch on another aspect of Japanese culture that has probably been partly demystified and partly become more mythical as a result of Western fascination, and that is the ninja and how ninja have become basically the rise of the ninja, if you will.
Yeah. The rise of the ninja, and also just the fact that when the floodgates opened for ninjas in Western society, the two things, right? Number one, it was an overnight. You went from no ninjas to ninjas literally everywhere. I want to talk about why I think that happened, because I think that there are multiple reasons for it. And number two, what I'm going to refer to as the whitening of the ninja, which we saw in every aspect of popular culture, but we also saw it in comic books a lot. So, you know, your delusion, your diaspora of Eastern culture into characters like Daredevil, characters like Batman, characters like everybody was a ninja. Everybody was a ninja at some point in comic books. You had no non-ninjas in comic books at one point. It was insane. The mid-90s were just stem to stern ninjas.
Yeah, I think that there was a point where, you could argue that there were characters before Batman Begins and Nightfall and all that, Batman was very as damn near ninja as one was likely to find in comics. But who knew what the term ninja was back then?
Yeah, but you know what? I think Batman is a good place to get into this before we start talking about, because we always. When we spin the big wheel and the Price is Right, every square is Batman except for the one that's $500 and sparkly and gold. So
Batman is always center square.
Batman is always center square, and he just wants fourth meal.
But he's also the other squares, the other eight as well. That's the problem.
Well, what's really interesting when you look at a game of
I'll have Batman for the block. Which one?
Well, it starts with a bunch of different celebrities. And Batman is the center square, and as the half hour goes on, more and more celebrities just disappear, and it's just Batman and all the squares by the end. But yeah, Batman started, when Batman started, Batman was not ninja. Batman was gun-toting, rootin'-tootin', punchin'-fistin', ruck-tuckin', you know, street-brawlin' Batman, but then around 82, 83, we started to see this shift in, oh, wait a second. Yeah, all right, so ninjas live in the shadows. Batman lives in the shadows. Ninjas tend to come out at night. Batman comes out at night. Ninjas have this, you know, this martial arts skill set that we can just make him have that. Instead of just punching guys and throwing them into walls, all of a sudden he's doing like leg locks and chokeholds and, you know, the batarang as a weapon and not a means of transportation became very prevalent during these time periods.
Yeah, I think once we knew what a ninja was, then anybody who already fit the bill
or didn't,
would retroactively be given the ninja history.
Well, I think if you really want to talk about retroactively be given the ninja history, I think you need to look no further than Psylocke. Daughter of weird multiversal British royalty who happened to be a psychic who had, like you said, I think somewhere between Farrah Fawcett and Kim Carnes' hairstyle for a long time. The next day, she wakes up and is Asian. And yeah. Has a katana? Wait, what now? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, we needed more ninjas. Ninjas are hot right now.
Yeah, it's almost like the grizzly old man quotient on Game of Thrones. You know, every now and again they have to infuse more of the same into the...
We just don't have enough one-eyed grizzly men on this show.
That's right. So, you know, when you gotta have a ninja, you gotta have a ninja.
And when don't you need a ninja? So let's talk a little bit about how ninjas became popular. And we touched a little bit, oddly enough. Now, I want to say this up top. In doing this research, it's very, very hard to find. It's almost ninja-like trying to find out when ninjas infiltrated the West. But I've kind of narrowed it.
Did you try Winja.com?
God damn it. That's been our show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hagen. If that website doesn't exist, it needs to exist right now. It needs to be right next to BillFingerBang.com in the hallowed hall of great website ideas from Hagen's Comics. Okay, so I
need to go ahead and register that right now.
You went ahead and derailed this show for a second, and that's fine. I want to know, give me your elevator pitch for Winja.com. I want to hear it.
Well, naturally, everybody, I think the ninja are going to come back in a big way. Nostalgia is always huge.
Sure.
And when they do, people are going to be curious. Like, when did it all get started? What's the first recorded, just the notion or the awareness in Japan of the ninja? Where did they get their start? And then more importantly, culturally, in pop culture, where did we, when did we begin our love affair with the ninja?
Can you drill this down to the ninja is my question. In your mind, if I want to know when a particular ninja started, ask Winja?
You'll be able to, you'll have categories like, you know, famous ninja and also a ninja timeline.
Aren't you kind of a failure as a ninja if you're on Winja.com?
Well, the thing is, Winja.com is going to be one of those, what they call like the dark internet.
So it's going to be on the deep web.
It'll be on the deep web and be hailed as one of the only sites on the deep web not having to do with, you know, anything tragic or terrible or the worst aspects of human nature, apart from just the ridiculous notion of...
Fuck fucking Windsor.com. I can't. I'm done. I'm done. Windsor.com is the best. That is in contention for the best idea of 2018, and we're literally on the first show of 2018.
It's only going to get better from here.
It can only get better, which is horrifying to me. So if we asked Windsor.com when ninjas started to infiltrate Western society, Cole, you kind of, in my research, you kind of hit the nail on the head last issue when you were talking about the Shogun miniseries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It turns out that I was more aware of the beginning of the ninja in American or Western popular culture than I ever realized.
It was insightful. I'll tell you that. It was super insightful, and it hadn't even dawned on me that could be the case, and it turns out it is. And if you want to know more about Shogun, the miniseries, go back and listen to the issue before. We kind of go in depth a little bit there, but you know, it's the Last Samurai idea of white guy in Japan during the throes of feudal Japan, and that's what awoke the U.S., I think, in the West, at least, in a pretty big way to the mythology of Japan. And now we have things like the Great Wall and, like I said, Last Samurai.
Oh, yeah. And it's also great fun for Anglophiles as well.
It is.
Because you get that great, you know, colonialism vibe for the where the West was at that period in history.
That's right. That's why everybody watched it. It wasn't for samurai swords, Subuku, and that one scene where the ninjas infiltrate the palace.
Yeah, the one scene that changed the world.
It was the shot heard not heard around the world.
That's right. Ninjas. It was the absolutely nothing heard around the world.
It was the silence heard around the world.
Wow, the deafening silence of the ninja.
The deafening silence. Wow, we should have named the second title for this issue The Deafening Silence.
We could do one of those Birdman things where you put it in parentheses, or
The Deafening Silence of the Ninja. So the other one, though, that shocked me, because I hadn't even thought about this being something that would trigger America's love affair with Japanese culture and the ninja, was a little movie that was released in 1967. So this is theoretically the beginning of our ninja craze, possibly. And that is a little movie called You Only Live Twice, starring Sean Connery. Screenplay by Roald Dahl, by the way. I think we talked about...
I did not realize that, but I knew that Roald Dahl and... So I'm drawing Ian Fleming were both like former spies and contemporaries.
Right. And this movie features Sean Connery ending up in Japan. And if you read the book goes way more in depth than this does. And remember, when we're talking about this, we are talking about 1967. It was a different time. Ladies and gentlemen, it was not.
Yeah, please bear that in mind.
Yeah, and it's the most bizarre. Okay. I'm gonna walk that back. When I'm saying something like it's the most bizarre James Bond movie, that needs to be taken at a grain of salt, because if you've listened to, go back and find the episode of United States of Geekdom where we talk about James Bond, because we do talk about live alligators and speedboat races. We talk about just all the real bizarre kind of errata and extrema that came out of the James Bond movies. But this one for me is one of the most bizarre, because the plot is that a spacecraft, wasn't it a spacecraft was hijacked in orbit or something like that, and then James Bond
my James Bond plots all sort of start flowing into one another.
Yeah, I know, but the the short version of this is at some point James Bond, otherwise known as Sean Connery, gets
the James Bond
gets knocked on the head and ends up in a in the book he believes he's Japanese. In the movie, I think it's just a disguise.
I think he gets turned to Japanese in the movie. They have like this weird, like temporary plastic surgery.
Yes, they do. Some stupid temporary plastic surgery where it's Sean Connery who looks like Sean Connery with a like dyed black hair.
It would be like Sean Connery's screen test for Sarek.
Damn it.
Only but they forgot we to talking, do up the ears.
We were talking off mic about
he's
how
like one of the least convincing attempt at I would say that the least convincing attempt at turning an Anglo into an Asian since The Good Earth in 1937. But quite frankly, what was that movie with where for its day, it was like back in the 80s when Arnold Schwarzenegger was supposed to be being cast as Sergeant Rock.
Oh, yeah.
When the Duke was cast as Genghis Khan.
Yes. But this was bad. But we talked off camera about the multi-ethnic acting abilities of Sean Connery, who is... who has been, at the same time, Egyptian and Spanish, somehow also Scottish. Those three things at once, which is amazing and also impossible. But Cole brought up a really good one. He also was what, Cole?
Oh, good crap. That's the problem with pre-show stuff half the time.
Well, I believe you were commenting on the fact that at one point he played Zardozian.
Oh, that's so true. Yes, he... I think, as Zardozian goes, it was, I was more convinced with him as a Zardozian.
Than you were as an Asian man.
Yeah, just.
Just a
little. I mean, in both cases, it was a lot of heavy makeup and some posing pouches.
I was going to say, really, the Zardozian, what sold the Zardozian was the authentic, what did we call it off mic? Meat pouch?
The posing pouch, yeah, or the banana hammock.
Of course, the banana hammock.
A classic stand by that.
Uncle Fester's sock. I don't know.
Uncle Fester's.
Yes, but this movie featured in a big way a special elite ninja fighting force.
Yeah, this was where you got to see the kind of ninja training school that be parried in Kentucky Fried Movie, for example, at the on the mountain of Dr. Klon.
I forgot that there was one of those.
Yeah, which was worse than Detroit.
I need to watch that movie again. I forgot that there was one of those magnificent ninja training schools in this movie. One of those awful, like, secret island courtyard ninja training schools that I'm sure are super prevalent in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're everywhere, right?
In a way, I'm not certain, but I think this could be the defining point for much that followed.
I think that they really set the stage for comic book writers to really grab a hold of the idea of the ninja and make it their own. And we just saw ninjas explode in comic books. Just insane everywhere. At one point, literally, it was almost night and day. It was almost nothing ninjas. I don't know,
You literally couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a ninja.
Right, which is difficult if you've known any ninjas.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be that easy.
There's a cultural saturation point with ninjas where if you can swing a dead cat and hit a ninjas, that's too many ninja. That's what that is.
It's time to cull the herd.
That's right. Well, nobody did more to cull the herd of ninja than one, and we have done shows on this man.
Yeah. Well, I think he's the one who, like, sort of brought us to that saturation point. It just kind of wrung out the ninja sponge all over comics.
Well, the thing about this guy and his ninjas is that when we're talking about Frank Miller, because I'm just going to go ahead and put his name out there, before Frank Miller, ninja was a zero-sum game. You had a ninja, you killed a ninja, ninja wasn't there anymore. That's the way that it was before Frank Miller. With Frank Miller, you got this idea that A, ninja couldn't be killed, and B, the hand existed. Which just, I don't know how they filled their ranks with millions of ninja in the middle of the 80s when everybody had jobs. Like, that's when everybody was working, Frank.
It's a lot easier to find henchmen nowadays.
Yeah, everybody had a job in the 80s. Everybody, you didn't get were you paying them ninja at scale? What were you doing? But yeah, if you go back and read and Frank Miller's seminal work on Daredevil, really brought the hand and the idea of the ninjas in. And I think he really did the same for Batman too. So I think Frank Miller on either side of that fence was really integral to bringing ninjas to the comic book zeitgeist in a huge way.
Oh, I think so. I think, and you know, he is the jumping off point. Perhaps it would be interesting to find out if he, you know, got fascinated with Shogun or something.
It would be. I would actually like to know that. Here, I have another theory, Cole, that I've been thinking about when it comes to ninjas. What you think about ninja stuff? When it comes to ninja, I've also been thinking about this. Frank Miller, during his prime and not during his, let's call it his experimental phase, which we have discussed experimental phases in the past, but during his prime art period, good artist, right? Not the most laborious artist. Because wasn't Frank Miller the one that decided that that Black Widow should have short red hair?
Yes, he had an economy of scale in his art later.
So let me ask this question. What's easier to draw than a ninja?
That is a little wonder.
It dawned on me like a couple days ago, like, why are there so many Frank? Why does Frank Miller rely so heavily on the ninja in his books? Oh wait, that's right. The same reason that Rob Liefeld has a lot of running water, because he just doesn't want to do it.
Like, yeah,
that's awesome. So I believe,
why draw feet when you can draw hooves?
I believe, in the time it takes to draw 100 ninja, you can draw one Hydra. I think that's the going exchange rate for ninjas. So I think that's what it was. But he was obviously enamored with ninja. He introduced, you know, the hand in Daredevil in such a huge way. Made them to this day, a lasting villain for the Marvel Universe. DC.
That's true.
Go ahead.
No, once the hand were in place, they took hold and grabbed right on and really just have a chokehold grip on the Marvel Universe at large.
They do. You never see them coming.
Yeah.
They just show up in your comic book, take it over, silently move through it, and then they're out the other side. You never see them.
That's right.
All I know is you're $20 missing off your nightstand. It's a fine how's your uncle. Let me tell you that right now. So what about DC? I don't think that they had as many ninja, except for, you know, Batman fought a bunch of ninja during, like, year one.
Yeah, they were, I guess, you know, they weren't as enamored, and perhaps because of the prevalence of ninja.
We can't stop saying ninja now. We started saying ninja, we can't stop.
We were talking yesterday and started calling them ninja, you know, I started the ninja thing. And,
yes, you did. It's your fault.
All of a sudden, you know, because I was talking about, you know, him ninja came around here, he's in a squirrel gun, and, you know, no more ninja. So
Cole had a really good, I'm going to say, but 10-minute redneck shooting ninja bit that he worked out there on the phone. Solid.
Just right there on the fly. So.
Solid work. But yeah, DC had ninja characters, and I guess you could say the League of Assassins, the League of, you know, Ra's al Ghul's group were ninjas, I suppose. Court of the Owls, sort of ninjas. Anybody in the Bat family apparently is a ninja now.
It's a prerequisite, unfortunately.
I guess so. I guess you got to get a license somewhere. There's accreditation. You gotta be a ninja then. But they didn't have the great ninja armies that Marvel did. Unless you consider the army of the Armless Master.
Indeed.
One of my favorite ninja characters, literally a martial arts master with no arms, who trained Catwoman and Hellhound, and also worked with Bruce Wayne to make him bring him back from the brink. But it also must be noted that his brother is the Legless Master, which amounts to the name of their studio, which is, or their dojo, which is Worst Luck Dojo.
Oh, wow.
One
and rather appropriate for our Hands and Feet episode, don't you think?
I agree. And speaking of, since we're talking about the hand, why don't we talk about the feet a little bit, Cole?
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, part of the point of this is the influence of the ninja on pop culture. And one of the things we've, you know, where that influence is most heavily felt is in what was literally a parody of The Rise of the Ninja. Because after Frank Miller, you also get, you know, the X-Men go ninja crazy.
Oh, yeah. Wolverine becomes a ninja. And has always been one. Who knew?
Yeah. And, he became what he always was. You know, it's like that Michael McDonald line about trying hard to recreate what had yet to be created.
Listen, you know what happens when you invoke Michael McDonald.
I do.
On this show, because what a fool believes. He says, okay.
So we're going to take it to the street. But,
he come from somewhere back into long ago. Yep, that's what's happening. All right.
That's the one. So, you know, that is what inspired what became one of the most amazing, amazingly successful indie comics in the history of indie comics in general, and that was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh,
and within that context, what better way to pay homage to the hand than for Splinter to be the founder and leader of the Foot Clan?
And we've done some in-depth turtle shows in the past. Cole's just been a ninja attack.
Just overcome. Yeah, they tried to get me there with a
cayenne pepper bomb, one of those
ninja stars.
But we've talked about this in the past, just how, because the, not only did they usurp Daredevil's origin story, but they side-surfed it. They suicide-surfed it, where the same accident that causes Daredevil to get his powers is the same accident that gives the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles their powers. So in,
that's true. It's amazing what a big barrel of crud can do for you.
In one of the most brilliant moves in comic book history, that I'm sure was one of those Rube Goldbergian mousetrap, you know, the fact that this book actually got, and we talked about this, but the way that the book actually got famous. Never in a million years, I don't think, did Mirage Studios, which, again, they called Mirage because it was in there. They wanted to give the illusion that they actually had a studio that wasn't their living room. Not only, you know, did they get away with that, but they also got away with, like you said, those homages to the hand by calling it the foot. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. There's no other way around it.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, you also, this was a time when the indies were on the rise as well.
Sure.
So another thing that you get here is the first story arc involves Ninja World theme park and ninja all trying to disguise themselves as a hedge to infiltrate the parody of Elektra. Also speaking of more ninja, where they're trying to infiltrate the debutante's family home, and they all disguise themselves as a hedge, and the Tick kind of recognizes that these ninja all standing in a row with sprigs of foliage aren't actually a hedgerow.
That's awesome. It became so meta that it became a parody of itself. One of my favorite kind of ninja parody comics was, are you familiar with Cowboy Ninja Viking?
I cannot say that I'm familiar with that.
So it's an independent – Cowboy Ninja Viking is an independent book. Cowboy Ninja Viking is the story of a
– I figured it was either that or a Vertigo title.
Right? It's Grant Morrison and Neil Gaiman's Cowboy Ninja Viking. Cowboy Ninja Viking is the story of a guy with multiple personalities. He's got three personalities. He's got a cowboy personality, a Viking personality, and a ninja personality.
And I have to point out, I'm surprised that you of all people didn't make this connection immediately, not unlike a particular ninja favorite of your own.
Yeah, I struggled with this, Cole. I really struggled whether I was going to shoehorn in Moon Knight into this issue. I just don't think he's – I just don't feel like he's ninja. Like I have a problem with Batman being a ninja.
Well, I think anybody who does anything, I don't know, remotely stealthy and employs the martial arts
right.
of the Far East, subsequently being labeled or pigeonholed among the ninja.
Yes, yes.
So I can see where you're coming from there. I think Moon Knight, in a way – embodies some of the techniques or the feel of the ninja, yet the glaring Mr. Clean White costume just doesn't give you much of an opportunity to to be stealthy. So you either that or he is so incredibly stealthy he gets away with it.
That's right. It's like Punisher painting that skull on his chest.
Exactly.
No, I really did. I'm glad you brought that up because I really struggled with do I include Moon Knight in my research? But I couldn't justify putting Moon Knight into the ninja category for some reason. It just didn't ring true with me, and I don't know why. But there are ninjas that I love in comic books, one of them being my favorite weird... Okay, so I don't love this character. I just think it's hilarious. Are you familiar with Nth Man? Do you remember Nth Man from your Diamond days?
I remember the title. I don't really remember a lot else.
So Nth Man, the ultimate ninja. Larry Hama's Nth Man, the ultimate ninja, who was strikingly, first of all, white, also strikingly un-ninja, not a ninja. I don't know why. Like they call him a modern ninja, but I have like four or five issues of Nth Man, the ultimate ninja, in my collection. And I can remember maybe once where he was a ninja, like did ninja things, and everything else, it's like grenades and bazookas and machine guns, strikingly un-ninja-like.
I think that they later got, introduced into ninjutsu.
Oh, well, see, I think he was
They had to expand the definition.
I get you. Damn it. Damn it, Larry Hama. So I got to say this because we're going to talk. I also want to talk about.
Well, the argument was, had those things been around.
Sure. I mean,
nothing's more stealthy than a bazooka.
Well, how stealthy do you need to be when there's nobody left to catch you? That's the real question. Let's talk about, okay, so what's, give me one of your favorite comic book ninjas, Cole. Like, who stands out to you as...
Well,
as
you know, it's funny, I had to double check because I wanted to be sure I was on the right. I followed off and on one of the, our, you know, from our last issue of Family Feudal, there was a certain character who very much embodied feudal Japan in comics. And that was our friend Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh, yeah.
And I seem to remember seeing Stan Sakai at a convention years ago when this particular storyline was actually in the published comics at the time.
Okay.
And seeing him in a panel being asked after this in a different way. And this is kind of an interesting analog to what we're talking about because of, you know, the perception of things. And because it's anthropomorphic animal characters, he introduced a group known as the Komori Ninja.
Okay.
And I think previously we had seen Ninja in Usagi Yojimbo.
Sure.
Back to that whole dead cat thing.
Right. The ninja's got him again, ladies and gentlemen.
They used
that ninja drop button on those coughs.
Yeah, I did. Yes, I did. Ninja cough. But the there was a the Komori Ninja were all bats.
That's awesome.
So in addition to being stealthy, they apparently had the further unique property amongst the characters in the series of being able to take flight. As bats, and the bat makes good sense as a ninja, quite frankly.
It makes a lot of sense.
Even though one of them looks like the bat version of Crazy and Ignatz in this one image I found. But the thing about it is, what was interesting to me is, at the time, I don't think I really appreciated how clever it was to use bats as the model for the ninja.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever had occasion to be within such close proximity of a living bat that it happened to shoot past you in the night, they are deadly silent.
Yes.
There's just this thing, and then in retrospect you get the impression there was a damn bat that just right in front of my face, and somehow he echolocated around my ponderous cranium and didn't smack into me. But what was really fascinating is that led to a question about vampirism.
Okay.
And the idea of the vampire bat. And Sakai pointed out that in Japanese culture, there are no vampires. There was never that concept of a person or a creature sneaking in rather perhaps ninja-like into the night to drink your blood.
These are just children of the night. They're completely silent, Bella.
Yeah, you can't. Well, it depends which children. Or, as we learned on a previous issue, pig farmers refer to their charges as the children of the morning. What music they make. But,
what music they make?
With a question mark. But the thing that was fascinating was, you know, it was just sort of this very Americanized or, you know, handed to us from a very European concept of connecting the mysterious bat with the mysterious vampire. What's really always been rather fascinating to me, I'd have to look and see, you know, certainly European zoologists were probably aware of, but bats in pretty much the entire rest of the world, especially in Europe, are universally either insectivores or herbivores.
Sure.
There's only one species of bat out of of just a truckload of species in the catalog that flies around in the night, lands on large animals, and opens a vein and drinks their blood. And it's always been kind of fascinating to me that an animal that existed only in kind of central and southern North America would have become synonymous with the concept of the vampire. Did the one, you know, inspire the other, or did we suddenly say, oh, wow, holy crap?
Do we have a Bader-Meinhof moment?
Yeah, Bram Stoker was right. So, but that, what was interesting about that was, you know, in the height of the popularity of the ninja, or, you know, introducing the ninja, which had become very much part of the comic book vernacular, that somebody was concentrating more on the fact that these guys were bats than that they were ninjas.
Well, I think at some point it allows for that.
With big bat pointy teeth, they necessarily had to be vampires.
Right, right. But that's the thing about ninja is that they, at some point in the grand design, it lends itself to that further speculation on top of just being a ninja, because there are so many ninja. So now you can have like vampire ninjas, which, by the way, they do have in Blade, the Vampire Hunter comics. They have vampire ninjas, just so you know. It's
oh, well, good, ninja. Good, yeah.
You can have like Viking ninjas, and, you know, the League of Assassins, I think, has, they aren't like straight ninjas. They're like desert ninjas and Arctic ninjas. You can start having, you know, subsets and subspecies and different phylum of ninjas now, because they're so prevalent that just being a ninja isn't enough anymore.
Yeah.
Like we desensitized ourselves to the idea of ninjas to the point where just having the ninja pedigree is not enough. Now you got to be a special ninja on top of that ninja.
Exactly. Well, you know, and we would be doing a disservice to ninjas and comics if we don't mention the fact, yet again with Larry Hama, the kind of, I don't know, the one feeding the other type of synergy of the toy and the comic that fed each other.
God, yes.
And that would be, of course, the G.I. Joe.
Yeah, let's never, so let's not take away the historical impetus that G.I. Joe has on the ninja in popular culture, because that was at the same time period.
Exactly. I mean, the G.I. Joe was being relaunched and reinvented in this new scale that had become popularized by the Star Wars. And what better way to enhance the lineup than to have your own requisite team ninja.
So did you, Cole, the little behind the scenes, did you watch The Toys That Made Me, G.I. Joe?
I have watched The Toys That Made Us. Well, way to personalize that, The Toys That Made Me.
Yeah, it's, listen, I felt it. It was me, buddy. When I was watching that, I was like, they did. Let me tell you, they did make me. No, but if you watch it, they talk about they talk about Snake Eyes, and
yeah,
they talk about how they had this lineup of what, 8 or 9 toys that the cost was going to be too high to make. So they could either deaccessorize all of them or take one figure, paint it completely black.
Yeah, just leave it in the original color of the plastic with very little paint apps, and that became instant ninja.
Yeah, the most popular character.
I think that Hama, you know, saw the tremendous potential there for this, you know, jet black character to just simply have a ninja background. What else do you do with that? And that just made it even more popular, because it bought into the popularity of the ninja.
The brilliance of Larry Hama was that, you know, because the first thing that they did was say, we have a comic book. You need to watch it. You need to watch it, because it's brilliant. It's just...
Yes, if you haven't seen on Amazon The Toys That Made Us, 4 out of, I believe, 8 episodes are already up.
Yes.
Oh, and so it covers some of the most amazing toy lines, the most successful toy lines, and gives you these insights that will just blow you away.
But what Larry did, and I also want to say this, I did send Cole an email or a text message at one point that just said, our AllCon experience will out during this thing. Did you get that text message from me? Like, we are vindicated.
Yes.
Larry Hama gets on this thing and is like, nobody dies. And I'm just like, there it is. Yep. There it is. That's what Cole and I experienced, but we only saw it in his eyes. But no, the brilliance of Larry Hama, because I believe the comic book came before the show, the TV show, if I remember right, because they didn't go to Filmation until after, right? The comic book came out, if my memory serves.
I think that is correct.
Is that Hama had the brilliance of saying, I've got this jet black character, right? I've got this character who I am going to make a ninja, essentially. But what I'm going to do, and keep in mind, at this point, Hama's no stranger to ninjas. Hama's been working the ninja circuit for a while. And he says, but what I'll do, I'm not going to have him say a word. Ever. Completely silent. Which made him everybody's favorite. Because you want to talk about mystery? You've got these guys cracking wise left and right. And then you've got this one character who's dead silent. It's brilliant. It is 120% brilliant. Like,
and deliberately in the comic, shrouded in mystery. I remember in the very first G.I. Joes when you see Snake Eyes without his mask, but they only show his face from behind.
Right.
And you you get the the sort of guy shuddering at the sight of him,
which is always my favorite comic book trope, like the
and then it's the just god awful campy line, we've grown accustomed to his face.
so good. Honorable mention for we're getting close to the end of the show already, and I don't know how that happened. Literally, I feel like we just started this show. Honorable mention, we've already talked about Nth Man, which is so great. Honorable mention to Ninjak, who we've talked about in the past. Valiant Comics Ninjak, British Ninja, Brinja, if you will. High-tech Brinja, Ninjak. And Cole, what do you remember about... A certain intergalactic ninja. Do you remember anything?
Well, before we move on to that one, I do want to point out that Ninjak's seemingly ridiculous sword gets vindication in, of all places, Star Trek.
What?
Go back to the J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Okay.
And Sulu...
Oh.
Produces,
son of a bitch, you're right,
none other than the Ninjak sword,
the Ninjak broken down
collapsible sword. It's like the what do you call it, the hurricane of swords.
Son of a bitch, you're right. Oh man, that's good. That's a good callback. It didn't even dawn on me.
I remember the first thing I'm thinking of when I saw that was, holy shit, that's Ninjak.
they're making a Ninjak web series. It's Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, and it's got, like, I believe it has, like, Exo Man of War and the Eternal Warrior and all those guys in it. I'm kind of excited. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah.
It looks campy and ridiculous and awesome, and I will watch every second of it.
Well, we also, you've got the, back to what we were, where you were headed earlier, is you also need to talk about a certain ninja in sci-fi, as it were.
This was always a weird, I remember picking up these comic books. You know, and I think they came. We always talk about the blind bags comics that we used to be able to get, where they would just stick like 10 comic books in a bag and charge you like $5 for them. I think I picked up a couple of these, but I didn't realize like what a creator favorite this comic was. Like, I don't think it was ever super, like, super mainstream famous.
Yeah.
But I think it was, like, every creator, every independent creator out there has had a hand in creating or in some way putting their stamp on Zen the Intergalactic Ninja.
Yes.
What the hell is this? Even had a Nintendo game.
Exactly. How did this thing become so huge? It's one of those unlikely hits in a time when there were a lot of unlikely hits.
It's like a super ripped gray alien.
Exactly.
So, like, I remember the one that I have is like a chromatic cover with Zen.
Yes, indeed. That's the first thing that popped in my head was the intergalactic chrome cover.
Was Zen like a floating monk, like cross-legged lotus style, like just floating in the air? Like, I remember that. I could probably dig in right now and find that copy. But he basically, the idea was that he was like this monk alien that became a mercenary ninja assassin in the universe.
As one does.
Yeah. Like, this is another one of those weird hits at 87, around the time of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, right in that boom phase where everybody had a finger in this. Sam Keith, Mike Mignola, I can't do it right now because I have a cold. Jay Lee was involved. Mike Esposito was involved. It was created by Steve Stern and Dan Coat, but everybody else had a finger in that pie for some reason. I don't really understand. And I got revived in 2008. Good night. 2008. Again.
It's the cold.
I'm just really excited about Zen the Intergalactic Ninja for some reason, and I don't know why. Also, Zen the Intergalactic Ninja appeared in a derivation of Tokyo Pop and in heavy metal. Joe Casey was in it. Why? I wrote it. I don't know. I don't get it, Cole. But I guess I'm not meant to. I didn't get it then, and that was in the prime of my comic book reading. Still don't get it. Have no idea. Somebody explain Zen to me and the popularity of Zen to me. Oh, man. Okay, I'm going to take a breath now because I haven't taken a breath in like 5 minutes. Jesus. Can we ask Winja about Zen the Explosion?
You can. It's still being built, but...
Okay, yeah. Incubated is what we call that. We're incubating Winja right now.
Okay.
Damn it. Goddamn, Winja was the best. Cole, that was good. Winja was Winja was solid work, my friend. I'm really impressed.
Indeed. Well, it's a good signal that I'm recovering from this cold.
Do you have anything to wrap this up? Do you have any final ninja-like thoughts to take us out on?
I have a great many that will have to be remaining silent.
Of course they will.
In the spirit of all of this, because it would break the ninja code to...
Oh man. Well,
but in all seriousness though, the rise of the ninja, I'm thrilled to discover that I was right on the money with the concept that, or you know, the observation that it was the airing of Shogun,
yeah,
the miniseries, that kind of set forth an explosion of ninja in popular culture.
Yeah.
And we see that borne out in comics, television, film. There was Lee Van Cleave series, The Master?
Yes. Yeah, and don't forget Kane. And don't forget Kung Fu.
Oh, yeah.
Had its fair share.
But, I mean, you know, when your principal character is an American ninja that would be at home in any Western... and in fact was at home in many a Western, combined with you know, this guy with this heavy New Jersey accent that was his pupil for the series called The Master. It was just, you know, the height of ridiculous and the height of ninja popularity.
I think Lee Van Cleef made his home out of old Westerns. Just
I believe he did. Yes, indeed. It was mostly old VHS tapes.
Right. Damn it. Lee Van Cleef. Oh, man. Yeah,
I'm glad I was able to conjure that name. I was already like, what was his name? I'm going to forget. It also looks stupid. But...
All right, Cole.
That's like every fifth episode.
Why don't we ask Winja when we can wrap this up so that we can let these lovely people go home? What's next yes, week? Indeed. Do we next week? Oh, no.
Oh yeah.
No. Next week.
Next week's going to be a challenge, yeah. I believe.
We're going deep. We're going hard in the paint next week. Next week we're talking about manga, right?
Yes, I believe we are, and we're going to need to bring in some big guns to help us out with that.
Yeah, I'm so far outside of my comfort level talking about that, so we're going to have to make some money.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, you know, in the weeds with David S. Pumpkins.
Is that your new travel show?
It's in the weeds with David S. Pumpkins.
Yeah, so next week it's all about manga. Cole, why don't you plug us up? We'll get out of here and let these lovely people tend to their sand gardens. I hope that's not racist. I feel like it might be.
I don't think so, because they're like at Christmas time. Everybody has those little.
Oh, that's true. Executive sand gardens.
Yeah, so that kind of made it more culturally acceptable to say sand garden.
Okay. So what's going on with – where can people find us? What's going on there?
Yeah, you can find us at JediCole.com. You can write to us at HeyKidsComics@gmail.com. You can check out other aspects of the Jedi Cole universe. Eddie and I are still mired in some heavy scheduling right now, so we haven't quite got back to getting the guild Ranker Pit pre-recorded show back in the works, but that's coming soon. But you can check out this Sunday on the 9th or 8th or 7th? No, 7th. Yes, January 7th at 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. on DallasOnAir.com. You can check out the Ranker Pit Live. Much anticipated episode of the live show, The Fault in Our Star Wars.
That's hilarious.
Where we talk about, we're going to actually just kind of be very critical of the Star Wars and everything but Episode 8. You know, that's got a bunch of people hurling around a lot of attitude and opinion on that. And we're going to just kind of, to temper that, we want to show off the fact that, you know, there's some other places where the Star Wars failed us.
There's a lot, actually, if you want to get technical. Yeah. But... that's hilarious. That's awesome. But good. Yeah, I don't think we have much more tonight. I think that's it. I think we're going to disappear into the night. But pay attention to your Wingy box, which is our next development. You've got Ask Winja.
Yeah.
Or you got Winja, right? And then we're going to develop a Wingy box, which is going to be, you're going to sit at your house, you're going to ask it questions, and it's not going to answer you. It's going to be great.
That's right.
It's going to be great. It's just,
you push the button, and it's complete and total silence.
It's going to be awesome. It knows, though. It knows.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it knows. Shit.
It knows more than you realize.
Listen, Winja could be the greatest invention of our time. I'm just putting that out there. I believe that that's it. So
remember, watch the deep webs.
Watch your deep webs. God, we sound so old. Watch the deep webs for your Ouija box come through with your, I don't know. All right, with your Bitcoin and your hula hoops. All right, we appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for listening. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
I was really hoping you were just going to be silent that time, too. All right. Good.
Maybe I was.
Oh, damn it. Got me again. Good night.